Cal Mena Show FC. We did a soccer podcast with Tavio Palazzolo at his apartment in Detroit. And I hadn't been down to Detroit in some of these more renovated areas to just see it and take it all in. And you guys will hear early on that I was pretty impressed. And it was really cool to be down there and just kind of feel that energy down there, which is really cool. We sat down outside on his balcony in the apartment on the 17th floor. And so that's a lot of the noise in the background and just the city sounds. And, you know, the quality of this one may not sound as great as the other ones, but I just wanted to capture all that. We were going to Facebook Live it, but we didn't. But it's all good. We got pretty deep into soccer. We talked about the U.S. men's national team. We talked about the MLS expansion and Detroit's prospects of having a team coming up, whether it's Detroit City FC or a new team made by Gores and Gilbert, which is the rumor that's going around, and it's been going around for a while. And obviously, we talked about international soccer and talked about Serie A and all the other leagues. So I hope you guys enjoy the show, and let's do this. And this podcast was supposed to come out last week sometime, but due to technical difficulties, it didn't record, and we had a super great conversation, but here we are, we're back, we're prepped, we're ready to go. Remember, this is an amateur podcast. I still have amateur status because I'm not compensated for this. At this point, we carry on, we march, and we talk about soccer. I know a lot of big soccer fans, probably not a whole lot bigger and more versed than Tavio, and I couldn't think of anybody else to have on than him. Tavio, thanks for having me over. I am just awestruck by the view as the sun and as it gets dark here in Detroit and all the lights light up. This is really great. This is really cool.
Thanks for having me on. I'm glad you're really enjoying the view.
Yeah, this is really cool. I'm pretty awestruck by this. I've got two mics going at the same time, so one way or another, we're going to put this out. And it's kind of cool that you can see Ford Field from here. I know the Lion ovens are cooking the cornbread and stirring the Kool-Aid because they're 2-0 in the preseason. And we start to get into football preseason and people putting together their fantasy teams and getting real excited for that. You know, we're 10 days away from Michigan kicking off, and the pro season starts a week after that. So, Tavio, I got to ask you, is there this much excitement? You know, we're 1 week in or a couple weeks into a lot of the championships in Europe. Is there this much excitement preseason for soccer, for professional soccer around the world, as there is for football here in America?
I certainly don't see it. I think what it is with the preseason, as I see fans look at it, certainly with fans here in the States, is that they see a lot of these games as glorified friendlies. You'll see a lot of players, oh, they're only going to be in for 20 minutes, and then they'll pull the stars out and throw the reserves and see who gets their shot, see who can make the team this season. But I think that fans just really look for the season to get going.
So, yeah, the friendlies, obviously, and there's travel involved, there's logistics involved. I mean, Napoli, that's my team in Serie A, Napoli, and they played a couple of lower-level teams in Italy, and, you know, when you go and score 7 goals, 13 goals, 17 goals on these teams, you know, what are you really getting out of something like that? That's basically, you know, the Tigers when they play Florida Southern in that first exhibition game every year. You're not going to learn much about your team when you're just running roughshod over these teams. But what I do kind of like is all the transfers and the new players going on these new teams and these outrageous contracts. But to me, I don't really get all of that. Is it similar to free agency like you would see in the NFL or the NBA? Or how does the transfer windows work? Because you're not just dealing with, you know, Utah to Boston or Tampa Bay to Chicago. You're dealing with Brazil to Portugal or Chile to Spain. You know, you're dealing internationally and everything that comes with that. How do these transfer windows work?
Well, the transfer window is, I guess you want to say, kind of like your free agency period, but it's not just for free agency, it's for everything. You couldn't make a trade. You couldn't sell one of your players to a different team unless you're in this transfer window, which usually happens two times in a year, once during the off season and once during the middle of the season. They run about a month long apiece. And it's different for every country, but each country that determines that, they can't bring any players in unless they're either a true free agent or they're during that transfer period.
So what gets involved? Like, I'm sure there's agents. You know, Neymar just signed that deal with PSG. And, you know, I'm sure there's agents involved. I'm sure there's club presidents and everything. What does that look like? Are there negotiations with agents and general managers or club presidents? Like there are, again, I try to use the parallel because the transfer window, to me, I look at it like free agency. Or is it just basically, here's 92 million euro a year or whatever, come play for Paris. And then that's it. The other team has nothing to do with it.
There's absolutely agents involved. It's just like here in the States where you have agents and general managers doing a lot of whining and dining to try and pursue a player. And one difference between regular sports in America here and with soccer is in America, if you're owned by a particular team, nobody else can talk to you until you're out of contract. Soccer, you're allowed to start talking 6 months out.
So there's no tampering.
Right.
Because right now, you know, Magic, they're going to investigate the Lakers and Magic Johnson. Even though Paul George didn't end up on the Lakers, they're going to look at tampering. So there's no tampering prior to, so you have 6 months prior to the end of a contract, basically, to start to say, hey, look at how pretty we are. We'll give you some pretty dresses or whatever.
Yeah.
They can come over. That happen often? I mean, this Neymar thing kind of came out of nowhere. It looked like that he just didn't start getting along. He just started not getting along with his teammates. There was that friendly where he saw that altercation, and then he just left. Or do you think the bug was already in his ear? I mean, it's a lot of money to just come out of nowhere.
I think it could be a combination of a lot of things. The bug could have been in his ear, like you mentioned, the altercations, and then there's also the rumor floating around that Spain was going to start going after him for tax evasion. And so he said, I want out. And at that point, what's Barcelona going to do? Could they hold him hostage? Sure, but do you really want an unhappy player? No, make some money off of it at least.
I mean, that cracks me up too, because you hear that a lot, and there's some pretty high-profile players that have bailed on countries because of tax evasion and things like that. You would think that their agents or their handlers would be able to handle all that, but again, maybe a parallel to American sports where they have too many hangers-on and they lose track of their money because they're taking care of their crew. Could that be the case where you see these falling into trouble, or is it just, again, when you're dealing with country to country to country, it's hard to follow the money?
Yeah, I think that's a bigger deal in terms of soccer because you have a lot more international talent. Like you said, moving from country to country to country, it's hard to keep track of all that.
Yeah. So there's no formal free agency period other than, say, the transfer window and things like that. There are labor unions. We talked the last time you mentioned that there are unions, but there's not work stoppages. Over here, you've seen multiple hockey stoppages. You've seen multiple baseball stoppages. The threats in the, you know, you've had the threats of NFL. You've had the NBA. They've all been through it. Why is there labor harmony in Europe and not here? Is it more of a business here, and we realize that, and over there, there's love of the sport, or can they don't have a pot to piss in, and they want to make sure that the money keeps coming in?
It's partly the love of the sport. It's partly the fact that it's a free market when it comes to soccer. Oh, things aren't going so well in this country in terms of owners wanting to spend money. That country is offering more. Let me go over and play for a team there. And it's not to say that work stoppages couldn't happen. It's just I don't see it as being likely as of yet. It did almost happen here in MLS in 2010. They made an agreement one day before the season started in 2010, which everybody was on pins and needles.
Was that a lockout or was it a strike? Was it the owner's locking?
It was a strike.
Okay. And that was, I'm sure, I mean, the MLS here, and we'll jump right into that after this. The MLS here clearly is not as big as La Liga or the Bundesliga or the Premiership, Serie A, these big, big leagues over in Europe. That had to have been a money thing. You know, the owners were probably seeing profits rise, and the players probably wanted their piece of that now.
Yep.
And that's always the root.
That was a big issue, and free agency was a big issue, because until that time, there was no free agency. If a team owned your rights, they owned your rights. That's it.
So there was no free agency when the league's 20 years old now?
Mm-hmm.
And that was after NFL free agency, and you saw Reggie White going to the Packers. I mean, let's talk about why would a league start without free agency at this point when you're getting a labor union involved? That's got to be a big part of the negotiation, is to let your client who's working under a contract be able to take advantage if their contract expires. How could you even let that happen? Like, as a labor union, maybe they just wanted to get the league up and running and they had to give some concessions. But years after that, when you get to 2010, or even beforehand, you would want to say, hey, man, my contract's up. Let me go explore the market. Why? I don't understand why the MLS, the union, wouldn't let that happen from the beginning. I mean, it's crazy to me.
The union didn't really have the power back then when the league started. It's, hey, if you want to play in America, you're going to play by our rules.
So the MLS started with how many teams?
10.
So we sit here now, and there's
22
teams. There's rumored to be four more coming within the next couple years. I'm sitting here, and from 17 floors up, all the buildings are lit up. I'm looking at the Rensen, looking at the Whitney building. Tigers are playing, Greektown Casino right across from me. Oh, the jail site. The famous jail site that's going nowhere, that Dan Gilbert and Tom Gores traded tweets about. Got all the soccer fans excited here in Detroit about potentially an MLS stadium. What's it going to take for Detroit to be one of those final four teams and then actually awarded with a team?
I think out of all the ownership groups that are applying for an expansion team, and there are 12 in fight for four spots. 12 different cities that you have, 11 different cities you have to compete against.
For four spots.
And I think they, as far as ownership groups are concerned, they have the most financial backing.
If it's those two guys.
But what they don't have right now is a stadium. And that's where the jail site comes.
So there's league requirements for a stadium. It's got to be a soccer-only facility?
Yes.
And 22,000 seats?
Anywhere from 20,000 to 25,000, depends on the market.
Okay. Would Detroit, and you're a big part of Detroit City FC, and that kind of strikes a different conversation. You brought up an awesome word, and I'll let you say it again. Soccer fans are almost like hockey fans, and there's a different...
It's almost like a counterculture.
A different counterculture, a different subculture, for sure. That stadium in Hamtramck gets filled up. You've told me before that the neighbors in that area love when it's game day. They recently made it to the national semis of their league. Explain how the minor league system kind of works. Is it a feeder system to MLS? Is it we want to be a competition? You know, everybody knows I'm a big wrestling fan, so there's the WWE and their feeder programs at NXT. But then they also get talent from Ring of Honor, New Japan, all these other smaller federations and organizations. Is that how it works here?
The soccer pyramid is a little complicated because there's always a flux of what league is working where, and if there's a new league coming in or some teams are breaking off. Right now in the first division, this is the top tier, you have MLS, which a lot of people will know about. But then you get to the minor leagues. You have second division, which right now there are two leagues and they operate under different principles. One's the North American Soccer League, the NASL. And they were set up as more or less competition to MLS. But they don't really have the financial backing to be able to get the stadiums, to get the players.
They don't have a TV contract.
They do have a TV contract.
But not with ESPN.
No.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be a big part of it, too. When Fox Sports and ESPN is broadcasting games, it's pretty much game over. So a league like that, that's wanting to be competitive with the MLS, it just takes investors and it takes them to get bigger and more exposure. So what's Detroit City?
Well, they're a little bit lower on the totem pole. The other second division league that's out there is the United Soccer League. It's USL. And they act, like you've said, in other leagues, they act as a sort of a feeder system to MLS. There's a lot of reserve teams that from MLS that play in USL. Plus, there's also other minor league cities that have their own operations in that play in that league. There's usually a third division. Right now, there isn't one a league there right now, but there's two startup leagues that want to get going in 2018 and 2019, and we'll see who lands in there.
So more leagues.
But then Detroit City FC is actually an amateur team. Only the top three divisions are amateur or are professional. Everybody below that is amateur. They're in the fourth division in the National Premier Soccer League. And they compete in their own league, and then there's another primary or fourth division amateur league called the Premier Development League, which is an arm of USL. The Michigan Bucks play in that league.
And they're fairly successful, too. I mean, they had a nice run in the domestic United States Cup, where they made it a couple rounds in and actually played the Chicago Fire and ended up losing to them a couple years ago.
Actually, they beat Chicago in 2012.
They beat Chicago.
Yep.
Who'd they end up losing to?
They lost to Dayton,
okay,
who's a third division team.
So, wow.
Next round.
You beat a major league team, and then you come down to... But you know what? Again, I think that speaks to the potential for a market in Detroit to be able to fill a 20 to 25,000 seat stadium. But that being said, is there enough disposable income for a soccer fan to say, I'm going to go catch a Detroit MLS game and then I'm going to go next week to Detroit City FC?
I think that depends on how you look at things and what kind of entertainment you're looking for. If you're looking for the best of the best that you're going to find in this country, you're going to want to go to an MLS game. But just like every other professional top-tier league in this country, it gets expensive. You got to buy tickets, buy parking, get hot dogs and pops for the kids, you know, and suddenly you're out $200-$300.
Right.
Or as if you go to like a Detroit City FC game, tickets are $10. You can get food for $5-$10. You get a different value for it.
Is it a different? You've been to a bunch of MLS games. You also, I think this is cool. You always travel with the U.S. national team. I think it's really cool. You go see their games. Is there a different vibe at these lower tier games than there would be at an MLS or obviously a national team game?
It really depends on the team. There are some teams like Detroit City FC where I would say the atmosphere rivals any in the country. For only being a stadium of 7,500 people, you would think the enormous support for the club, the atmosphere is immense.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to some other minor league teams or even a couple MLS teams, the crowd's just flat. Yay, they scored, but they're
sitting on their hands.
Yeah.
So Portland and Seattle, and you know, and obviously your bigger squads like Los Angeles, the two New York clubs and everything, but Portland and Seattle stick out to me because they're newer teams, they both have won championships already, and those stadiums are loud and full. But they don't even move the needle when it comes to international notoriety. That's not the word I'm looking for, but like a Juventus or a Real Madrid or a Barcelona or a Manchester United. So can the MLS ever compete with those leagues where somebody that has, you know, capabilities to watch MLS, that they live in Spain, that they're going to be like, you know what, I'm going to watch an MLS game tonight? Or they're just, it's not going to happen.
I think the mentality is with a lot of the teams and a lot of the players and fans in Europe, sure, they know MLS is around, but just like any average European, what are they going to know? They're going to know the big cities. They're going to know, oh, New York, mm-hmm. or L.A., Chicago, Toronto, you right. know, the big places. Places like Portland and Seattle don't really register on their radar, not necessarily because they're bad teams. Like you said, they've between the two of them, they won the last two championships. Yep. But they have more of a regional and national notoriety as opposed to international just because of the sizes of their cities.
So they started as lower-level teams, both of them, and they were able to expand into the league because of Seattle has an affiliation with the Seahawks.
You do?
Obviously, you hitch your wagon to anything NFL. Could Detroit City do follow the same route? Could they be an expansion team? Or is Gores and Gilbert going to have to look at starting a whole new thing?
I guess it depends on which route they really want to take. The owners of Detroit City FC, there are five of them, they started the club as a hobby. These guys all have regular jobs. They don't have the financial backing to really put Detroit City FC on the map professionally. So they need investors to come in. If Gilbert and Gores want to come in and say, hey, we want to bring Detroit City FC up and keep the standing in the community that the team has, keep the history that the team has, that would be one thing. But they could also say, you know what? I don't need you guys. We're going to go and do our own thing and potentially drown them out.
What's the most likely outcome?
You know, I don't even have an answer for that. Because I've seen different sides where, at times, where they said, oh, we're going to try and hint and just doing our own thing and forget these guys. But other times, they work with them. Quicken Loans is a sponsor of Detroit City FC. The two owners, Gilbert and Gores, brought in Venezia, which is a second division Italian team. They sponsored the game for Venezia to play Detroit City FC. So it's really two sides of a coin, and you don't know which one is going to end on.
Yeah. And those, and do they have a good rapport other than the sponsorship, the owners, with Gores and Gilbert?
It's very hush-hush.
Okay. Very professional business, and that's about it. That's all we'll let you know. It's Quicken sponsors us.
Yes.
Next question, yeah. So, in your eyes as a fan, and, you know, in my eyes as a fan, I definitely would be excited for a professional soccer team. In Detroit, you got the Pistons moving back down. You know, the Wings moving into the new arena. The Lions and Tigers are here, and you know, having a soccer team, like you said, to appease that subculture and bring them downtown, and to see how dope this is. I mean, I'm again, we're talking, and you're seeing my head stray, and I hope everybody's kind of picking up some of the ambient noise in the back, because 15, 20 years ago, this wasn't happening. And
this was a ghost town 15, 20 years ago at night.
Yeah, and there's lights on, and there's no fights, there's nothing. I mean, so that would appease that counterculture, I think, to bring them down here and generate more revenue for the city. I think, if anything, the MLS should be able to come down and take a look at that and say, you know, we've done it in Seattle. We've done it a couple times in Florida. We've done it in Portland. Why do we need another team in Ohio? Why do we need another team in Texas? Can we do it?
I don't know. Cincinnati has an argument. They did draw 35,000 last week to an Open Cup game.
Where were they playing?
They play at the University of Cincinnati Stadium.
Okay. And Atlanta. Atlanta's another team, too, this year. This is their first year. And that fan base is real rabid. You can almost say Atlanta and Detroit have the same vibe, same type of downtown.
I would say that.
I mean, it's incredibly... I mean, Atlanta, let's not get crazy. Atlanta's incredibly busy, and Detroit is not there yet. But if Atlanta can support a soccer team and have a fan base like that, I think Detroit could be able to do the same thing. And it would pull from... There's multiple ethnicities that live in the suburbs, as well as in Detroit, that would go watch these games, because it is their game from their homeland. I mean, you and I were raised on Serie A soccer, and last month there was Rome that played PSG. Did you go to the game?
I went to that one, and I went to the Venezia game.
Tons of fans.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Italians.
Oh, yeah.
And I was surprised to see that there are a lot of French. A lot of French people. Which is great, and that's a spectacle. And a couple of years ago, they played, you know, some games at, you know, Michigan Stadium, and they sold that out. You know, you drew some of the heavy hitters, you know, Manchester United or Real Madrid, and, you know, you drew some of the heavy hitters, so of course you're going to sell those games out. But soccer as a niche sport can grow, and it has the potential to easily outdraw hockey. If hockey's not going good in Detroit, you see what happens. You know, the Joe was empty. It's the last year. The Joe was nearly empty, and it's being mismanaged right now. They're going to have a hell of a time to get money, to get major league money out of people's pockets, like you said, for tickets, for parking, for food at this new stadium. Whereas opposed to if you have a little bit of excitement and atmosphere coming from a soccer team, you'll get people there. Almost like the Detroit Shock. I mean, they're not here anymore, but they won a couple championships. They were selling out the Palace. And that was exciting for the whole city, too, and that was up in Auburn Hills. But it's got to happen first. It's an expensive proposition, too.
It is an expensive proposition. Just to enter the league, right now the expansion fee is $150 million.
And that's just to apply, or?
That is if you're accepted.
Okay.
But then the city, the league looks for a stadium. U.S. Soccer requires that the prospective owners have a certain amount of financial wealth to be able to get into the league. So you don't have some fly-by-night operation.
Sure, sure, sure. So you don't have a thing that happened with the New York Islanders when that guy with absolutely no money owned the team for 3 days before the NHL came onto him. So the MLS is looking to expand, which obviously means there's growth. We follow, and NBC has their contract with the Premiership, and Fox has their contract with the Champions League, and, you know, Napoli just made their way through to the group stage after beating Nice. Apologies to my listeners in France and the wonderful city of Nice. And we watch that, and we go crazy for that. Is it tactics? Is it style of play? Is it just the bigger names that hold it back? And why in America do we love La Liga and the Premiership and not Serie A, the Bundesliga, or the Dutch League?
From my perspective, with the Premier League, yes, it's where a lot of big names go, but also it's catered to the American market because they speak English. It's a big thing in America. It's a big thing in Canada. It's a big thing in Australia. It's a league you can sort of relate to. And with La Liga, you're looking at two of the biggest clubs in the world, in Real Madrid and Barcelona, and they always seem to have the biggest stars of the era right now being Ronaldo and Messi.
Ronaldo or Messi?
Messi.
Messi.
Yeah.
Ball control, being able to be a playmaker.
Yep.
I agree. Ronaldo's a hell of a scorer, but it seems to me that he benefits a lot from those playmakers, putting the ball on his foot, giving him the ball in the right spot. The things I've seen Messi do over the years with his feet, I've never seen. And again, you know, I've seen a lot of great players in my day, and you have too. But so everybody's on the Ronaldo boat right now because of Messi's shortcomings with Argentina,
mm-hmm.
but you can't deny what he's done with Barcelona. So you mentioned that you have these all-star teams, but there's no parity in these bigger leagues either. We talk Real Madrid, we talk Barcelona, Atletico Madrid. When we're in the Premiership, we're talking about Man U, Arsenal, Chelsea. You know, every now and then another team will sneak up, Man City. And in Italy, it's Juventus and everybody else, unfortunately, right now. The way that the league is set up, the way that they have their money, the way that they're privately owned, which is another huge dynamic I want to get into in a little bit. Leicester City came out of nowhere last year, though, and they won the Premier. And they actually did decent in the Champions League. Is that an aberration where some of these smaller teams can build from that, or lightning in a bottle?
I really think it was lightning in a bottle, because how often in these bigger European leagues, the English league, the French league, Spanish, German, Italian, how many of these small clubs have you seen win in the last 20 years? Hardly ever. But
I mean, it's hard to get those smaller clubs qualified for the European League or the Europa League or Champions League.
Right, they can sneak into that, but to win a title is a whole different ballgame. And I think it was lightning in a bottle, but I also think 2016 was a strange year. You had Leicester City winning out of nowhere. The Cubs won. The Cavaliers won. Like, where did all this come from?
Right. So the universe put it out there for Leicester City to just overcome a 3-1 lead, basically. Well, that's okay. Cleveland got theirs this year, and on the heels of the Kyrie trade to Boston, LeBron, good luck next year to you. And Gilbert, he's on his way out, so get an MLS team over here. He's leaving Cleveland. He's going to be in LA next year. But my thing is we love parity. The NFL aside, because the Patriots will win Super Bowls until they decide not to, just like Juventus and Serie A. But we love parity. We love that every now and then you'll get the Indians versus the Cubs in the World Series, or you'll have a Carolina and a Denver make the Super Bowl. But then at the same time, and I'm guilty of this too, I love Roger Federer. I loved Tiger Woods. I love watching Golden State and these super teams getting built right now, because the dominance, I just love seeing dominance. Am I contradicting myself that I want parity, but I also want to see history? And can parity ever happen in these bigger leagues? Why isn't it set up that way?
I think the whole reason you don't really see parity happening too much in these bigger European leagues is that it's a free-flowing market. And it's unlike where you have here in the States, where you're dealing with a salary cap and you can only make certain maneuvers with your players. But the teams in Europe, they're starting to slowly pick up the American mindset and start looking at their teams not as an investment, but as a business. You're not really looking so much to build your fan base and build a team, but to line your pockets. Mm-hmm. And so you have teams like Juventus that built their own stadium a few years ago. Now all that revenue is not going to the city, it's going to them.
And I think that's one of the craziest things, that a lot of these teams are handcuffed by the city because the city owns their stadium, more or less. Juventus is a private team. They own their own stadium, which means they're in control of their concessions, they're in control of their merchandise, and they keep all that, unless whatever they have negotiated with the players and the players' unions. Whereas opposed to Milan or Rome, they're playing in city stadiums, which means the $12 they may charge for an arancina or a slice of pizza, the city gets a lot of that and the club doesn't, so they can't compete. Why wouldn't some of these owners wise up and say, you know what, when the lease is up, I'm going to build my own stadium?
You're starting to see that. You're slowly starting to see the mindset shift in Europe. I think a lot of it is being able to put up the money to build the stadium, because you have a big issue here in the States where, oh, hey, give me a big tax break. They'll go to the city and say, can you front some money to help me build a stadium or I'll move? That doesn't happen in Europe. The teams aren't going to move. Mm-hmm. I've only seen one instance of a team moving cities in Europe, and that was the famous Wimbledon case back in 2004. So you can't hold that over the city. So you have to come up with your own money, and a lot of these owners, I don't think they quite have that.
Okay. So are there any investment groups or teams with multiple owners, or are they pretty much singular owners that don't have enough partnership to be able to do something like that?
You'll see some of the consortiums, like with the
PSG, I know they have from Qatar.
Yep, they're owned basically by the Qatar government.
Oh, wow.
More or less. And so they have no shortage of money coming in.
As much as it allows you to pay Neymar as much as they did. So a guy like him going to a team where you're paying him a ton of money, do you change your system for a player like that, or do you ask that player conform to the way we play? It's one guy, and you've got a roster full of players that have already been there. And PSG's famous for buying a lot of great, you know, players, whether they're on their downslide or coming, you know, into their post peak. You know, goes back to Lavezzi, Ibrahimovic, it goes to Cavani, and goes guys like that. Is Neymar changing his style, or are they changing for him?
I don't think it works to ask a player to change their style. Sure, you get like some of these young guys saying, hey, can you slide over into the wing or something like that so you'll get more playing time. But I don't think it works. I think it works better if you have the manager of the club try and form his formation based on the players that he has, because that's when you're going to get the best abilities out of them. You have the players know what they're doing, know what their role is, and they can do it. They can do it better than if they were to play somewhere they're not familiar with.
So that had to have been part of him talking to the team, is, you know, this is what I like, this is how I play, and there had to be some concessions there. That's also a big thing between the leagues too, where, you know, you and I grew up and Italy's always been a defensive country. You're going to win a game 1-0. Juventus had the best defense in the world last year until the Champions League final. But that's what we know. Germany's that rough and rugged, tough play, but they're going to score 3 or 4 on you. And then the Prem is wide open and it's fast-paced. But players don't have a problem jumping from country to country, do they, to be able to adapt to that if you've got enough talent?
For the most part, no, you don't see it. You always hear, every once in a while, you hear players talk about trying to adjust to the style that the league is as opposed to the team itself. Or, yeah, this team's a little different. Like, for example, a lot of what I hear of players that come into MLS, it's a very aggressive league. You got to be able to hold your own physically or you're not going to make it.
And I can see that. It takes almost like an American feel to it, and we are aggressive, and we are get our elbows dirty, and we are, you know, nose to the grindstone, and that's the personality of the country itself. You look at international play, and diving is an issue. I've never seen an American player dive in international competition. I don't think they do that in the MLS, because they're just, you know, that's not how we win. That's not, you play hard, and there's no shame in that. But some of these bigger name players may not be able to adapt to that. And the style needs to project, obviously, to an international audience. But MLS doesn't have a problem, it seems, to draw players who are on the back end of their career. Do they still have that funny payroll structure where you can only pay X amount of dollars to foreign players?
No, and I don't think there's ever been that sort of limit as far as how much you pay them, but there's always been a limit in terms of a salary cap and how many foreign players you can have on your roster.
That's the one I was talking about. Okay.
But here's the difference in America as opposed to any other country. In America, if you get your green card, you're as good as any other citizen. MLS is not allowed to discriminate.
Okay.
So they count as a domestic player.
And at which point it opens up the opportunity to keep bringing people over. So the David Villas, the Andrea Pirlos, the other players, Beckham, that have come over, have they done that, or have they kept their international status?
They kept their international status, but there have been a lot of players that they've been here a while and they got their green cards. So the team's like, great, another international spot opened up. Let me see who I can go find.
Okay, I like that. And vice versa, where Jurgen Klinsmann, who the former coach of the men's national team, encouraged his players to go play overseas. There's no restrictions like that overseas. Any team can have any amount of foreigners on their team, which to me has killed Italian national soccer. All their best players, mm-hmm. all their best teams field South American players, they field Spanish players, and I think it's killing the Italian league when it comes to international competition.
You don't really see that where you have players that are all from the same country on a particular team. And like you said, it's hurt the Italian league. They argue that it's hurt the English league too. I mean, how many foreigners are playing on an English team? And that's why they complain, oh, it's why England hasn't won anything in 50 years. On the flip side, you have the players that you do have that are playing in the native country playing against, yeah, foreign players, but these are world-class talents. So maybe they can pick up a thing or two, elevate their game.
I thought that the idea that Klinsmann encouraged his guys to go play overseas was smart. I mean, you want your best players playing against the best competition. And you definitely see that it benefited Rich Hill. Was a perfect game through the eighth inning. And an error, he loses his perfect game. So shout out to Bleacher Report for having that come across. I didn't want to say anything as the updates kept coming, but third baseman error loses a perfect game. But going back to the competition, you want to see what your guys have up against the best of the best in the world. And for a time, that benefit your Tim Howards, your Clint Dempseys, your Landon Donovans, your Michael Bradleys. Bruce Arena doesn't have that approach, it doesn't seem like. But he's gotten the team back on track, the U.S. national team. What has he done different than Klinsmann was able to do? Did Klinsmann just lose his team?
I think Klinsmann looked at it as very structured, where you have to do this, this, and that, or I'm not going to bother with you. Bruce Arena's had a different mindset. He understands that the different players are going to have different mentalities as to how they want to play, what their strengths are, where they want to play. And I kind of go along with him on that. You have some players that really want to challenge themselves in Europe, like Clint Dempsey, like Michael Bradley, who played for great teams over in Europe. But then you have a player like Landon Donovan, for example, and I hate to bring that up as an example, but it's the easiest case to grab, where he didn't quite make it in Europe, but it's not because he didn't have the talent. It's because he wasn't comfortable being his full self and bringing all he had there. Just something didn't click.
Was it stylistically his style of play as opposed to the team he played for?
I think it was more a mentality.
Okay.
And for some people, that's a big thing.
The bright lights?
Maybe.
But he's arguably the best player the United States has ever had. So he's going to go to England and get caught up in that. I mean, that's a mental block. And if we've seen anything out of him, and especially his last couple years, there was definitely some ego. There was definitely some something going on that didn't allow him to just focus on his talents. It seemed like he was always clashing with Klinsmann, whether he was going to be on the roster or not. And maybe he didn't take the lessons that Klinsmann was trying to give him to heart. But it didn't affect a guy like Tim Howard. He won an FA Cup, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big deal for an American goaltender.
Yeah.
And, of course, we all know his nickname after that Belgium game in the World Cup, the Secretary of Defense, was it?
Yeah.
And, I mean, or the Department of Homeland Security, whatever it was. I mean, that's a record-breaking performance that they will mention every World Cup to come. And it's an American guy. So it seems like America doesn't have an issue getting out of the group stage in the World Cup. It's what happens after that. You know, in 2002, they made their run to the quarters.
It was a Torsten Frings handball away
from
the semis.
It was a handball away from the semis. And damned if they didn't, they would have beat Germany at that point. You know, like a handball away from reaching the semis. And who knows what would have happened at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the peak? Is that as far as it goes for the United States? Or can it ever get there? I mean, you've got this... the new prodigy, Pulisic. And by all accounts, he's incredible with Dortmund. And he plays pretty well with the United States as well. And is that generation, you know, he's 17, 18?
18.
But we've had a lot of prodigies. Donovan was a prodigy. Freddie Adu was the prodigy. What
Josie
Altidore was a prodigy. Beasley was a prodigy. I mean, you can go back as far as, you're talking about players like Miola, who's the, star goaltender, whatever the case. But do they reach a certain level and realize this is all we have in the United States? We can't compete with, you know, we can get Mexico, but we can't get Spain or Portugal.
I think with the right mindset, we can get there. You see what Pulisic is doing, and it's better than we've seen from anyone in America at 18 years old in decades. I mean, it's mind-blowing what he's doing for Dortmund right now. But the thing is, I don't want to jump on that hype train because we've seen what happens on that hype train.
Could Arena use him wrong? I mean, are you almost treating him with kid gloves right now? Because, like you said, you don't want to put all that on an 18-year-old kid.
You don't, but I feel like with the situations he's been put in, either for Dortmund or for the U.S., he's been embracing it. And that's what leads me to believe that, yes, I do think the U.S., if at the right talent, at the right time, if they're clicking, that they could be world beaters. Just think back to 2009. They beat Spain in the semifinals of the Confederations Cup. And Spain at the time was a train rolling.
They were in between their Euro Cup and World Cup at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And they were clearly the best team in the world. And they beat them in the Confederations Cup. And they had a lead at halftime on Brazil. 2-0 going into that final, which would have been their first international championship. Worldwide.
At the senior level,
At the senior level. I mean, they've won gold cups and things like that. But then after that, it just kind of stalled out. Again, they reached the next round of the World Cup, the round of 32, round of 16, and it peters out. When do you foresee it? This is the cliche question that's been being asked for 27 years now, 25 years now, since the World Cup was here in 94. 23 years. It was 23 years ago. Yeah. The World Cup was in the United States.
Wow.
I remember going to see...
9 years, it can happen again.
Sweden. It should. I mean, international competitions are bankrupting countries. look at poor Brazil right now. Poor Brazil, after the Olympics, they're in shambles.
Yeah.
They should have never had the Olympics. Los Angeles and the Olympics. Like, the Olympics, to me, you pick three cities and you rotate it between there if you have to do it. Los Angeles is equipped to do the Olympics because it's got everything else to lean on. Cities that are international, so, you know, World Cups and things like that, you can't do it. So Detroit, when we had those couple games, I remember seeing Sweden versus Brazil in 94 at the Silver Dome. Full. 85,000, 88,000 people, however many it held, full. And that was great. United States played Switzerland. They tied that game. Was 1-1.
It was the first game.
So then at that point, everybody's on the U.S. train, the soccer train, and we're still having the same conversations today. When's the U.S. make the next step? Is it the feeder programs? Is it the academies? Is it doing what Jurgen Klinsmann did and, you know, grabbed all these guys that have played internationally but they're U.S. citizens because they live on military bases? What is it? What are we missing here?
I don't think there's one right answer to that. I think it's a combination of everything. You see the academies here in MLS and some of the other academies that are training players to eat, sleep, and breathe soccer, and you're starting to see a lot of talent come out of that. Dallas, for example, has been a leader in their academy program. There was one game they had 7 starters that came out of their academy system. And I think that could be part of it. I think getting players over to Europe is part of it, like you see with Pulisic. Unfortunately, to be able to do that, you need a European passport in most cases, and some aren't so lucky to have it.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you mean? Why wouldn't they get a passport? Oh, because he's...
Citizenship.
Okay. All right. And that's another thing, too, man. That, like, so you play these Champions League games, and you're doing the home leg and an away leg, and you're going from Italy to France, and then you're going from Germany to Portugal, And you've got to get visas right. I mean, we've seen it before. We're in hockey. Guys can't play.
Was there a thing? Guys for the league.
Yeah, Prober can't go to Toronto. I mean, legal issues aside, but, I mean, there's international things happens. Like that where, I mean, am I crazy to say that maybe Germany wants Bayern Munich to win and they don't allow Ronaldo in to play? Visa issues? Could that ever come up? I mean, why not? Why doesn't the United States do something like that? Yeah, come to the World Cup, but you know what? Sorry, Pirlo's got to stay home. No visa for him.
You can't really discriminate because I don't like that guy.
Well, I mean,
if you're in good standing, playing an international sport, making millions of dollars, you'd almost have a riot of people going, "Why can't they come in?"
Maybe there's some money laundering, or maybe there's some tax evasion going on in that country. Who knows? But with the international appeal growing. The United States, if it makes that next step and makes a final, wins a senior level international championship, where does soccer go to? It'll never catch football. I'm sorry, this country's, we love football. I love football. I can't wait for football season. But do you see it that maybe it becomes the second sport, the third sport? The third sport, I think, is its peak.
I think you're starting to see that already. And not to discount you in saying it's always going to be football, because there was a time that everybody said, oh, nothing's ever going to top baseball.
True.
And sure enough, football surpassed them.
True.
If you look at what's happening now among the younger generation, soccer is the second most followed sport in this country behind football.
And I think it's probably the first most played. I mean, on any given weekend, you're driving through any city in suburbia, and these soccer fields are filled. So there is definitely something to that. I think also football might be starting to dig their own grave. They're not paying attention to the concussions. They're not paying attention to the injuries. Mm-hmm. They're definitely not paying attention to the social issues that Kaepernick aside,
right?
You know, people beating the piss out of their girlfriends or their wives, or they're not doing. They're focused on suspending Tom Brady 4 games for deflating balls allegedly, and they're going to suspend Zeke Elliott 6 games. And he'll probably win his appeal because of what his name means in fantasy football. So I think football could dig their own grave. So there is something to say to what you just said about the cyclical popularity of sports in America. I mean, look at basketball. It has skyrocketed in the last 3-4 years as well, where it went through its doldrums. Your post-Jordan era, where Kobe was the standard bearer, kind of gave way to this new generation. You know, LeBron is, you know, out of his mind. And you've got the Warriors, and you've got the Celtics coming up, and these different. The San Antonio still doing what they do. It's my team, but they skyrocketed. But do they have the outreach to get into the inner city? Do they have the outreach? Like, baseball has a hard time drawing participation from the inner cities and some of the minorities. Soccer shouldn't have that issue. It's cheap. It's cheap to play, right? I know, mm-hmm. Academies aside, if you're in an AYSO or just a city league, it's cheap. You just need a pair of cleats every year, right?
You would think, and there are some players that have come out of the inner cities. A classic example that I can think of is Eddie Johnson. Came out of a podunk trailer town in Florida to be one of the stars of the national team about 10 years ago. So it can happen, but fortunately, that's a rare case right now. Mm-hmm. I can tell you here in Detroit, there's maybe half a dozen teams in high school. That's not really saying all that much.
And then the PSL, you're talking about the PSL, the Public School mm-hmm. League, and it's a huge league. Lack of interest, lack of funds, I'm sure it's a combination of everything, but I can't imagine that if some multi-sport athlete is excelling at everything he does, in Detroit that they're not going to want to pursue football or basketball because those are the large revenue sports.
There's
that
money.
Have the potential to get you through college. And, you know, if you're in an AAU or something like that, you're going to get looked at by these colleges, especially in the one-and-done system that all colleges have. You don't have to go to Duke, but if you get to Marquette or if you get to a smaller school like a Davidson or Dayton,
mm-hmm.
yeah, if you make a name in college, there's a potential. Whereas in soccer, you're competing against millions and millions and millions of, you know, so-called the next guy. And you may not be it. You may not be able to hack it. I think going back internationally, we've had a couple weeks. You know, you and I talked about parity already. Let's talk about Serie A for a minute. Napoli made their way through to the Champions League group stage. You know, Juventus is already there. Rome's already there. Are we looking at the same three teams again in Serie A?
Unfortunately, yes. I wish that wasn't the case.
With all the moves that Milan made, that's your team. With all the moves they made, they started seven new guys in their first game, and they've had some pretty good games. You know, obviously the headliner is Bonucci coming over from Juventus. They can't kind of break into that echelon, or is it too soon?
I think a lot of teams are scared of what Milan did in the transfer window with all the players that they picked up. But now is the time that they have to bring it on the field if they're going to make a name for themselves this year.
Is there a precedent for that? I can't remember an off-season like Milan had.
No, not that I can think
of. I can't remember. So that has to translate into success because, again, if I think about it from a standpoint of the Tigers, they spent a lot of money in the mid-2000s. And there's a great disdain for that team right now because they came away with two World Series appearances, and that's it. They didn't win one, and they couldn't keep it. They lost their manager. Now they got this new manager in there. So there's a disdain for what the Tigers, they couldn't get over the hill. But we also have the Lions and the Pistons and the Red Wings. In Milan, there's Milan and there's Inter. If they're not doing anything, I don't think that they're watching the basketball team. You give a team like that 1-2 years, or is there patience? Trust the process like the 76ers?
Unfortunately, in Italy, there is no patience. You constantly see coaches getting fired and then rehired because, he's still on the payroll. I might as well bring him back and try again.
Yeah.
I think in Serie A more than any other league, I want to see results and you're out of here now.
Mm-hmm. And with Napoli, they've shuffled through. They haven't finished lower than third. I mean, I'm going just off of brief memory. In the last 5 years, but they've been through three coaches. So talk about no patience. Yeah, it's going to take a lot to get through a Juventus and their payroll and their style of play. But if you keep changing coaches, you keep changing tactics. And that's got to hurt. Does a fan base continue to just be disenfranchised and stop going to games? But that doesn't tell the owner anything because they could just sell their top guy and make all their money back.
Yeah.
It's a weird system. It's a weird setup. I try to bring the parallels back to, you know, the NFL and the NBA. But I don't see parity. You know, like you said, you think it was lightning in a bottle, Leicester City caught. I don't see a Abbonolefi or a Sassuolo or some of these mid-level teams,
yeah.
You know, winning. Even a Fiorentina, who's in a big market for Italy, they can't crack that top four.
And the thing is, they used to be able to, teams like that in Italy and in England and France and Germany. But what changed in the last 20 years? TV revenue.
Mm-hmm.
You see millions upon millions of dollars being showered upon these teams, and in a lot of the leagues, fortunately England's doing it right where the money gets spread evenly, but in a lot of the other countries, the bigger teams get a bigger cut.
The bigger money.
So there's a bigger draw.
So there's a revenue sharing system set up in England.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, I go to watch a Coppa Italia game, and I can't find it on TV anywhere. I can't find it on Rai. I can't find it on Sky. I can't find it on Mediaset. So why does the contract allow me to watch Serie A regular season games, but I can't find a Coppa Italia game? Or if I wanted to watch Napoli in the Champions League, it's not broadcast on any Italian stations. Who determines that?
It's all in what organization is running the show and who owns the rights. The league is going to have their own contract. If you're talking about Coppa Italia, that's run by the country federation, so they can distribute the rights how they see fit. And then the Champions League, that's managed through UEFA and whoever they sell the rights to here in the States.
My father goes to Italy every year for 3 months, and by the time he comes home, the season kicks off a couple weeks into the season. And with Napoli being in, you know, some of these, the Champions League games, he has a hard time finding these games. I mean, you want to talk about a fan base being disenfranchised. It's not the team's fault, but don't you want exposure? I mean, if I was the United States and I had a team that was able to compete in the International Champions League, what is the official name for that one?
The Club World Cup?
The Club World Cup. And if you had a team, I would want that on every TV in every bar in America. Wouldn't Italy or Germany or Spain want those guys, those heavy hitters, on every bar in their country? They're going to let negotiations like that screw that up. It's ridiculous, because who makes the money? The federation, the country, and the organizers of the tournament. And the fans end up losing.
Yep.
And what I think is pretty cool, an alternate revenue stream, is they really embrace gambling. They really embrace gambling in Italy, and I'm sure in the other leagues as well, but do they see revenue from that?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you, because I don't...
You don't gamble?
Experience on it. I don't gamble, and you don't see it here in the States. I mean, sure, you talk about gambling, fantasy football, it's right up there with, hey, this player's doing good, let me throw $30 on him this week.
Right.
But it's different when you're talking about leagues discussing gambling. Here in America, everybody was scared to go to Vegas.
Right.
For years, nobody wanted to touch it because, oh, players and teams could bet on themselves or somebody else in the league. And
they can do that now.
But it's only legal in Vegas.
Okay.
And they didn't want to invite that.
But I think the internet, and I think the new, you know, the new technologies allow for that. If I'm Henrik Zetterberg, and I decide that I'm going to go ahead and turn the puck over a couple times against the Leafs, I'm pretty sure I can get money to Mandalay Bay or to the Westgate to make sure that I cash in on that. So it's a matter of, you come down hard if it's ever proven. And when we talk about gambling and fixing games, Italy has no room to talk at all. I mean, with the culturalopoly disasters that have happened multiple times, they have no room to talk about gambling. So embrace it, so it doesn't become as taboo. But if you find these players and clubs fixing games for that, yeah, you have to come down hard on it. But there's a lot of money in gambling, and if you can benefit from that, and you can get a piece of that because you're allowing your likeness and your images and your, you know, things, do it. And to me, because I love watching the Lions, and I love, not the Lions, the Lions, the gambling Lions. Oh, God,
that's
it starts again. It starts again in a couple weeks.
Start drinking the Kool-Aid.
Oh, no, heavens no, not me. But I like paying attention to that, to see how that shifts and what the public thinks. There's got to be a way to be able to take advantage of that here like they do in Europe.
Yeah.
Okay, so you said they were scared to go to Vegas. You also said counterculture and subculture. Hockey. Hockey is that. Hockey is its niche. Their national TV contract sucks. ESPN regrets the day that they let hockey leave because they lost that counterculture. They went to Vegas. So that's innovative of them to do that. So let's see what happens there. MLS, again, you've got a nice little niche. You've got a nice fan base. Let's see what would happen if you were to go to Vegas. let's see what would happen if you let MGM sponsor a team or whatever. I mean, hell, the owner of the Boston Celtics is on the board of MGM. So no Celtic games are ever up to be gambled on in MGM properties. Okay, no problem. You do that. But you know what? I mean, embrace Vegas and embrace the money that goes.
It's taboo where you're not going to see casino sponsors on like a team's jersey, for example, or there's no crossover, like you said, with the Celtics and MGM. Look here, Motor City Casino. When Mr. Mike Ilitch was alive and owned the Red Wings, he could not purchase Motor City Casino. The NHL wouldn't allow him.
So it was so his wife did.
Yes.
Okay. So come on. Now who's being? Come on. That's like, oh, I didn't buy that weed. It was my wife. Whatever. You know, so yeah. Now who's being naive? You know, we get ready to wrap this up here. We have Champions League going on. We have the seasons that just kicked off, and we got World Cup qualifying. The Gold Cup win for the United States, albeit not over Mexico, who everybody was projecting it to be because of the upset with them in the semis. What do you think for the United States? Are they got rid of Klinsmann due in part because there was a chance they might not have qualified. Are they over that now? Are they in?
I think they're in now. I think there was a big scare after losing the first two games where it was a massive wake-up call. It's like, okay, we need to do something about this. And they thought Klinsmann was the way to fix it, and they got rid of him to do it. And now with Bruce Arena, they've gotten everything back on track. They're now in a solid position to get back to the World Cup. As for what they do when they get there, might depend on how the players are feeling at that particular time. Might depend on how the group is drawn.
Depends on the group of death if they end up in that one again.
But they got out of it last time.
They got out of it the last time. They won the group?
Second
place in the group. I thought they won the group.
They won the group in 2010.
Yeah. So again, they get out. It's just that next step. So do they make that next step this time?
They have the talent to do it. It's just a matter of whether or not they have the right mentality and if they're clicking as a team.
Way too early prediction. Who wins the World Cup?
I think if you look at it right now, and it's scary to even think about, I have to go with Germany again. Just look at what they did in the Confederations Cup. They basically threw an under-21 team in the final against Chile, who's won the last two Copa Americas, who's one of the top five teams in the world. Germany beat them with an under-21 squad. That's scary.
Yeah, and Chile's really good. I mean, Chile, you don't think about them as the dominant South American team, but they have been the most consistent over the course of the last 4 years or so. I think you're right. I think Germany, they're just too young, they're too strong, they're too fast. I think that's the team. That's the Spain right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was France, and then it was Spain, then it was, you know, Germany that's kind of hitting their stride. I don't think any South American teams, especially the embarrassment that Germany put on Brazil in the last World Cup, can compete. I don't think Messi is a factor in the next World Cup just because of age. And I don't think that any teams can compete with the European teams. I think you're right. I think Germany's the team to beat. What about Italy? What are we looking for there?
You never know can happen. I mean, you see a team that they're going to be okay, and they end up winning like they did in 06, and they come back in 4 years and all puffing out their chests,
yep.
And they have basically a Juventus squad plus a couple other players thrown in, and they crash out.
Yep, they don't even get out of the group stage. I say that the 97 Michigan National Championship and Michigan National Championship and Italy winning the World Cup are my top two sporting moments, and I stick to that. I hope I see it again, but it was at least cool that I saw them win in 06. What I want to see is Napoli win the Scudetto. I don't hold out much hope because long as Juventus decides they want to win, they're going to win, right? And that's what's going to happen this year.
It can happen. They've done it before. This was back when Maradona was for Napoli. But
30 years ago, sure, yeah. I mean, I remember, maybe not you, but whatever. Let's talk about that. Your Mount Rushmore of soccer players all time.
Number one, without a doubt, Pelé. there's no question. I don't think anybody's ever going to argue that.
I don't think so either. I mean, the longevity, his playmaking ability, his goal-scoring ability, his international appeal, and it was probably... And he's just... He's the most famous name in soccer. Yeah. I'd agree with you there.
After that, you're going to get into arguments. You have players like Johan Cruyff, players like Maradona, Zinedine Zidane, Messi and Ronaldo. Who do you pick?
Right, right. And it's an era thing, and I think you run across that every year in the NBA, every generation in the NBA. Well, Jordan's no Russell. Well, Kobe's no Jordan. Well, LeBron's no Jordan. Well, LeBron's no Kobe. You run into that. You know, Ronaldo's no Pele. You know, you could go back to some of the Brazil team that beat Italy, and everybody thought Romario, and then it was Bebeto. They were supposed to be the best players. And I think it's fair to put Messi up there with Pele, just because, again, what he's done for the game all over the world, he's a little guy, and he's magic. He's magic. I think it's fair to put him on. But I think you're right. Maybe there's no clear-cut Mount Rushmore, but that's an easy way out, so I need two more from you.
Then, all right, I'm going to stick with Johan Cruyff. He changed the mentality of the game, gave way to the whole Dutch system, and he worked it like a masterpiece. As for fourth... I wouldn't know where to begin. I mean, do I throw a goalkeeper on there? Maybe we'll throw Buffon in there.
Buffon.
Maybe he deserves to
be the greatest goalie of all time.
I think he's up there.
Yeah, I mean, you can make the argument for sure. In case you were wondering, mine's Insigne, Amsic, Callejon, and Milic right now. So that's mine. Tavio, I'm glad we got back together to do this. Again, looks like both mics held up, both recording devices held up. And thanks for having me over. This was great.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Sal, and thanks for coming over.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, I want to thank Tavio for having me over to his cool-ass apartment in Detroit. It was cool to see all that and then the sun go down and the Tiger game was going on, which is just cool to see the city alive. And I was impressed. I'm gonna change my tune on Detroit. And definitely excited for these soccer seasons to start all over the world. And the Champions League draw came out today. The Italian teams didn't fare so great. I mean, it looks like Juventus and Barcelona are gonna go at it. And Napoli has Manchester City and no one else, so they should be able to get through no problem. And Rome, thanks for showing up. Your group, you guys are not going to make it out. So thanks again for listening, guys. Find me on Instagram and Twitter at FNGeese. Check out the show, share the show, tell your friends about the show. And until next time, see you later. Thanks.